Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation Mount Zion at the 12th Hour. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is May 29, 2014, our Decision 1, 2018. We will start our first service on this new moon Sabbath with a blowing of the trumpet. I'll go where you want me to go. It may not be on the mountain height or over the stormy sea. It may not be at the battle's front. My Yah will have need of me. But if my still small voice he calls to pass, I do not know. I'll answer, dear Yah, with my hand in thought. I'll go where you want me to go. I'll go where you want me to go, dear Yah, or a mountain or plain or sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear Yah. I'll be what you want me to be. Perhaps today there are loving words which Yahshua would have me speak. There may be now in the paths of sin some wanderer whom I should see. O Savior, if thou wilt be my God, too dark and rugged the way, my voice shall echo the message sweet. I'll say what you want me to say. I'll go where you want me to go, dear Yah. A mountain or a plain or a sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear Yah. I'll be what you want me to be. There's surely somewhere a lonely place in his harvest field so wide, where I may labor through life's short day, or yes, for the crucified. So trust in my all unto thy care, I know thou lovest me. I do thy will with a heart sincere, I'll be what you want me to be. I'll go where you want me to go, dear Yah, or a mountain, a plain, or a sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear Yah. I'll be what you want me to be. Part 10, we're in the 144,000 series with the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1. We're on the subtitle now is the milk. The next symbol mentioned is the milk, and it too must be perfect in itself in order to point out the truth intended by the Spirit of the Yahweh. For the human body is made up of the 16 different elements. If we should exhaust our supply of one of these elements and life did not cease immediately, depending on the element lacking, there would be trouble somewhere within the human system. If milk contained all the elements required to keep the human body The meaning of the symbol would indicate that the first two symbols or doctrines are of no great importance. Since milk does not contain all the necessary elements, it signifies that the doctrine represented by the milk only is not sufficient, for the element of the milk is absent from the milk. Though a trace of the iron is found in the milk, it is so infinitesimal that it may be expressed in the following language: for the amount of the iron found in 10 gallons of milk to be put in the corner of one's eye. That which is not found in the milk is supplied by the wine. Therefore, the three doctrines taught here cannot be separated one from the other. What is the doctrine taught by the milk? This symbol is simple to understand, for the milk represents the word of Yahweh as found in the Bible, 1 Peter 2:2. As a newborn babes, I desire the sincere milk of the word, that ye may grow thereby. For the Elohim's word is perfect, and it will supply all the doctrines, elements needed for the human heart to make us perfect. But without the shedding of the blood of Yahshua, it would not profit us at all. Neither would the word and the blood help us much if there was no life in the son of the Elohim. Thus the water, wine, and milk are combined and cannot be separated one from another, and still maintain life eternal. Perfect symbols, are they not? Suppose you would add an element to the milk. Would it not be a strange one? And if it be a strange one to the milk, would it be foreign to the human system? If this be true, we must conclude it would be poison to the human body. But you say, suppose I add the element of iron. It would not then be poison. By adding another element, it would put the milk out of the balance, and it would be milk no longer. It is impossible for the human wisdom to improve on the Elohim's work, just so it is impossible for us to neglect one of the Elohim's words and yet maintain spiritual life. Neither can we add, though the thing may be good as we may see it, it would throw the word out of the balance, and it would be Elohim's word no longer. Just as the milk would be a milk no longer, Elohim's word must be kept in the human heart, pure and unadulterated, if we must live by it. For this robe woven in the loom of the heaven has in it not one thread of the human devising. That's taken from Christ Object Lessons, page 311, by the Ellen G. White. One must say, if the milk is not a balanced diet, how then can a babe be raised on the milk and yet be perfectly healthy? The Elohim who made the milk knew what the baby requires for its growth and what the milk could supply. So he has made provision before the babe is born, between the stomach and the small intestine. In that part of the bowel is found a large lump. The lump is placed there to supply the iron. The opening to the small intestine, so as well as to the stomach, is too small for the lump to pass through. Thus, it is compelled to remain there. Each time nourishment passes by, it absorbs part of the iron. Thus, the element is supplied, and the babe has suffered no lack. As the baby grows older, the lump gradually decreases in the size, just as it is with the human babe. So it is with the animal life. Truly our Elohim is infallible, and who can comprehend his wisdom? Why spend money for that which is not bread? Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfies not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in the fatness. Isaiah 55:2. When we spend our money for food which does not contain all the required elements, or if it is of an unbalanced proportion, then it is not as the Creator made it. In such a case, we have spent our money for that which is not bread. When buying food, we must be very careful in our selection and make sure that it is free from the adulteration or disjunctive manufacturing processes. In such foods, the elements required to sustain physical health are not found. It would be only a waste of money in buying such foods. The worst harm done by the use of these baser products is not to one's pocketbook only, but to his health and reducing his physical power. The upkeep of the human body depends on the food supply we give it. Okay, it says, blessings to Jews and Gentiles, blind watchmen, Isaiah 56. In the beginning of this chapter, Elohim asks his people, keep your judgment and do justice. The reason given is that his salvation is near to come and his righteousness to be revealed. The thought is that the scroll is soon to make a turn, and the present order of the things must change. If the watchman unto whom Elohim is speaking would not commence a general housekeeping, Elohim would have to get watchmen who would lift their voice like a trumpet and show his people their transgression, the house of Jacob their sin. Elohim in this chapter asks his people for a strict Sabbath observance, regardless of who they are, without distinction of the class, race, or people. Thus they shall have the promise of his covenant, and their offerings and sacrifices shall be accepted upon his altar. There is a severe charge against his watchmen of their failure to deal with the sins in the church, and the result is that his people are devoured by the enemy. His watchmen are blind, they are all ignorant, they are all dumb dogs, they cannot bark, Isaiah 56:10. For the phrase dumb dogs is not to humiliate them, but is used here as a symbol of all animals. A dog is man's best friend, and it is a dog's business to protect his master or warn him of the danger by the sound of his barking. But if that dog becomes dumb and fails to give the sound, then he is not only useless unto his master, but dangerous, for he cannot be depended upon. Thus a dog is a perfect symbol of a watchman over the Elohim's people. A good faithful minister is man's best friend by the warning him of the danger involved in the sin. But if that minister will not sound the alarm and give the warning, then he has become as a dumb dog, not only useless but dangerous, for thus the sheep are devoured by the enemy. The watchmen are not only charged with the failure to deal properly with existing sins in the church, but they are greedy as well. Come ye, say they, I will fetch wine, and we will fill ourselves with strong drink, Isaiah 56:12. This refers to the same watchmen or servants as in Matthew 24:48-50, who are gluttonous, disregard health, reform, and do not see the danger. Read Isaiah the Gospel Prophet, page 25, first paragraph. The watchmen mentioned by the prophet are not those in Babylon, the popular churches, but his watchmen in his true church. According to the testimonies of ministers, page 445, Ezekiel 9 is the sealing of the 144,000. Speaking of the Ezekiel's prophecy in volume 5, page 211, we read, for the ancient men, those unto whom Elohim had given great light, and who had stood as guardians of the spiritual interests of the people, had betrayed their trust. They had taken the position that we need not look for the miracles and the marked manifestation of the Elohim's power as in the former days. Times have changed. These words strengthen their unbelief, and they say, the Yahweh will not do good, neither will he do evil. He is too merciful to visit his people in judgment. Thus peace and safety is a cry from men who will never again lift up their voice like a trumpet to show Elohim's people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sin. These dumb dogs that would not bark are the ones who feel the just vengeance of an offended Elohim. Men, maidens, and little children all perish together. Okay, that sounds like Ezekiel 9. We're talking about there. It says, for the righteous and the wicked now in the day of trouble, it's found in Isaiah 57. That's our next subtitle. The righteous and the wicked in the day of the trouble. For the entire 57th chapter of the Isaiah deals with the idolatry in the Elohim's congregation. Elohim's people were called to come out of the Babylon. For the reason why we are called out is that we are to depart from the customs of the Babylon. So it sounds like Mount Zion's 11th hour at Kermit, Texas, had a call to come out of Babylon, because she had adopted her Babylonian custom. So now I can see why Yahweh sent antiquity Elijah there to give them a call to come out of Babylon. And they refused to do it. They chose to stay in Babylon. This chapter reveals the truth. Though we came out, we brought the customs and idolatry into the house of the Yahweh. Now this is true. Believe it or not, we did do this, the house of David. We came out down there. We didn't realize that our whole way of life was practicing customs and idolatry still. And we're to come up to the full measure right now is calling for another step on the house of David. But the evil spoken of in this chapter is Christmas keeping and Christmas gifts one to another. For the 9th verse says, we have honored the king, the devil, by doing this and debase ourselves even unto hell. This surely is true. We as a people spend the Yahweh's money in telling the public that Christmas is not the birthday of Yahshua, and then turn about and do the same thing the world is doing. By such methods, we are implicated in the highest form of the hypocrisy. Well, that's what we did at Kermit. Rodus Johnson rolled a track. He put the Christmas tree on the front of it, showing it along with other pagan symbols. And yet, he turns around and he goes and tells his Adventist conference president, says, that's idolatry to observe Christmas. And the conference president said, yes, I know, brother, that's true, but we do it for a different reason, to socialize with our family more. We do it for that reason, not for the reason that the world does it for. Brother Johnson said, well, it's still idolatry. And in essence, Brother Johnson was telling this man that this is a birthday celebration. And if Brother Johnson had done his homework, he'd have said, yeah, I'd come right out of Egyptian. He'd come out of Babylon. And then he'd have found, Brother would have found out by his own research that he celebrating his own birthday and allowing his wife to celebrate everybody's birthdays in the church when it comes along. It was a height of idolatry. Same thing as keeping Christmas. No different. It serves the same purpose. It means the same thing. And so, when the Catholic Church brought that pagan custom forward and implemented it in their church and have taught the world to accept it, little did Brother Johnson know that he was just camouflaging one celebrating his own birthday. Okay. And so Brother Johnson allowed his wife to do Christmas cards and do birthday cakes and presents on holy feast days, even on the Atonement Day.
They didn't do Christmas cards.
I mean the birthday celebration I'm talking about. Not the Christmas cards, but the birthday cards. On holy days, in the church, in the administration building. And also to read cards for Mother's Day and so forth on the Sabbath day in the church. Okay? So, you wonder why then it says that slothful servant in Isaiah 24 is the same as that one in Isaiah 56. Okay, let us go on. Isaiah 57, verse 4 and 5 and 6 tell of the evil practices of the Israel of old and are written in this chapter to make a comparison with the people now, inasmuch as to say we are doing the same as they back there and are no better. Quoting volume 1, page 129, I saw that many who profess to believe the truth for these last days think it strange that the children of Israel murmured as they journeyed, that after the wonderful dealings of the Elohim with them, they should be so ungrateful as to forget what he had done for them. Said the angel, you have done worse than they. To explain the entire chapter, it must be taken verse by verse. that being too lengthy, it cannot be done at this present time. Okay, true of fasting, the Sabbath restored, Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58:1, cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins. Elham asked his watchmen to cry aloud, and not to leave one thing undone, to lift up their voices like a trumpet, and fear not how far the sound may reach, to show the transgressions and sins of his people by a general house cleaning, for his salvation is near to come, and his righteousness to be revealed, quoting Testimonies, Ministry, page 427. We read, cleanse the camp of this moral corruption, if it takes the highest man in the highest position, Elohim will not be trifled with. For the second verse describes the people unto whom he wishes to speak. The first part of the third verse tells of the complaints his people are making. We have fasted and have afflicted our soul, but our prayers are not heard. He takes no knowledge of them is their cry. For the last part of the verse tells where the trouble lies. Behold, in the day of your fast you find pleasure and exact all your labors. This fast cannot be a fast for the food, for when one is fasting of the food, he is permitted to find pleasure and exact all his labor. In fact, one must go about his daily duties as usual, so that he would show no outward appearance of the fasting. For our Savior requires that this duty be performed in the sincerity and not in the hypocrisy, for the glory of the Elohim and not for the attraction and appearance unto man. For the Yahshua said, moreover, when you fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou fastest, anoint thine head, and wash thy face, that thou appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in the secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. Matthew 6:16-18. Turning back on Isaiah 58, verse 13, it tells the kind of fast that is, if thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy Yahweh honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words. Therefore the fast mentioned here is not a fast of the food, but of the pleasure, labor, and our own ways and thoughts, and that we must honor Elohim and keep the Sabbath holy, for the charge is that we exact all our labor on the Sabbath day. As a people, we have forgotten the true meaning of the Sabbath keeping. We have come to suppose that anything which pertains more or less to religion is permissible on the Elohim's holy day. It is said it is Yahshua's work. But Elohim has never said anywhere in the scriptures that his people are at the liberty to do all manners of work that pertain to religion on the Sabbath day. Work which can be done on a day other than the Sabbath is not a work for the Sabbath. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh, thy Elohim. In it thou shalt not do any work. Note the way the commandment reads, any work. Elohim does not mean that we can do our work in the 6 days and his on the Sabbath. He says it is a day of the rest, not physical, but spiritual rest. For instance, it would be wrong for one to sell good religious books on the Sabbath, even if he turned all the proceeds to the church. It would be wrong for a surgeon to perform surgical operations on the patients on the Sabbath day if it can be done at another time. It would be wrong for a nurse to give treatments to patients on the Sabbath day if it was not absolutely necessary. Read Volume 7, page 106. Or it would be wrong for a church council to meet on the Sabbath and discuss church business or make plans of any kind. It would be wrong for a Sabbath keeper to load himself with evangelical announcements for a series of meetings and distribute them from house to house on the Sabbath day. All this manner of work would be done on a day other than the Sabbath. When we do this kind of work on the Sabbath, we do it to save ourselves an hour or so of the time for the next day. Thus we rob Elohim of his time and add it unto our secular pleasure. If it is wrong for one to go and sell good religious books on the Sabbath, though he turns all the proceeds to the church, it would be doubly wrong to sell that same book in the house of Elohim on the Sabbath day, regardless of what is done with the income. If all of this is true, then it would be wrong to go out with the harvest and gathering papers and receive contributions for missions on the Sabbath. It is time for Elohim to call our attention unto these things. Quoting Patriarchs and Prophets, page 313, 314, "You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people." For the direction had just been given for the immediate erection of the tabernacle for the service of Elohim. And now the people might conclude, because the object had in the view is the glory of the Elohim, and also because of their great need of a place of the worship, that they would be justified in working at the building upon the Sabbath. For the guarding them against this error is with the warning given, even the sacredness and urgency of that special work for the Elohim must not lead them to infringe upon the holy rest day. For the balance of the chapter 58 teaches that we must take care of our poor and sick instead of sending them to the country farm or hospital, If we are to delight in the Yahweh, there are many lessons that we can draw from the services of the ancient Israel. Elohim gave them the seventh-day Sabbath as a day of the rest for the praise and thanksgiving. Though the sacrificial was a sacred religious service requiring much labor, they were not permitted to do it on the seventh-day Sabbath. For this reason, Elohim gave them the monthly Sabbath in which they were to do that sacred work. Elohim did not allow every kind of religious service to be performed on the seventh-day Sabbath. Then will he now? I the Yahweh change not. Read Leviticus 23. I want to correct B.T. Hodoff on this here. About the scriptures not backing up offering up sacrifices on the Sabbath day, on the seventh-day Sabbath. And he said Yahweh gave them a monthly Sabbath, in other words, on the new moon, more preferably to offer up sacrifices. Well, all holy days have the title of Sabbath. And so when Yahweh said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, he's talking about any Sabbath day, whether it's a monthly or an annual or a weekly. They're all holy, and if you're not to offer sacrifice on the seventh day Sabbath, then he would say so. And then it would say you're not supposed to offer sacrifices on any holy day. But the holy days is especially pointed out to offer sacrifices upon. And I'm going to read some of it to you. In Exodus 29 and 37, it says, 7 days shalt thou make an atonement for the altar and sanctify it, and it shall be an altar most holy. Whosoever touches the altar shall be holy. Okay. Now this is that which thou shalt offer upon the altar, 2 lambs of the first day, of the first year, day by day, continually. So for 7 days, you're to offer this up, this lamb. This will be a offer upon the altar 2 lambs of the first year, day by day. The one lamb thou shalt offer in the morning, and the other lamb thou shalt offer at the evening. This is your morning and evening offerings for the tabernacle. Now this is in that week of the dedicating, of that 7 days of dedicating. Now in Ezekiel 46, starting with verse 1, it says, "Thus saith the Yahweh Elohim, the gate of the inner court that looketh toward the east shall be shut the 6 working days, but on the Sabbath it shall be open, and in the day of the new moon it shall be open. And the prince shall enter by the way of the porch of that gate without, and shall stand by the post of the gate. and the priest shall prepare his burnt offerings and his peace offering, and he shall worship at the threshold of the gate. Then he shall go forth, but the gate shall not be shut until the evening. This is talking about when it's open on the holy day, on the seventh day Sabbath. Okay. Likewise, the people of the land shall worship at the door of this gate before the Yahweh in the Sabbath. That's whether seventh day Sabbath or annual Sabbath or and a new moon. Now, today is a new moon Sabbath. And here's your authority for worshiping on the new moon Sabbath and making offerings. And the burnt offering, verse 4. That the prince shall offer unto the Yahweh in the Sabbath day. Here it is, the seventh day Sabbath, shall be 6 lambs without blemish and a ram without blemish. So it says 6 lambs. And the meat offering shall be an ephah for a ram, and the meat offering for the lambs, and he shall be able to give an hin of oil to an ephah. And in the day of the new moon it shall be a young bullock without blemish, and 6 lambs and a ram, they shall be without blemish. And so it says, and he shall prepare a meat offering, an ephah for a bullock, and an ephah for a ram, and for the lambs according unto his hand shall attain unto, and a hin of oil to an ephah. So what did we learn here? Not only on the Sabbath day are you supposed to offer, that they were to offer up offerings, but they were supposed to do it at the morning and evening. And it says in verse 6, and in the day of the new moon, it shall be a young bullock without blemish, and 6 lambs, and a ram, they shall be without blemish. I rest my case on that. V.T. Audubon is wrong, and that's the reason why he ended up like he did. Finally, he just completely come to his end in 1955 and not knowing which direction to, or how to continue on leading his flock. And so Yahweh mercifully took him out of the way. He had provisions made for his next work, though, to succeed V.T. Hollis, and that was the work of antitypical Ishmael and the work of antitypical Esau. Ben Roden representing Ishmael and Roder Stonson representing Esau. And so prophecy deemed that V.T. Hollis had done his work. He'd done all he was called to do. And so Yahweh knew that he wasn't supposed to build the tabernacle and restore all the holy days and teach all of this. So that's the reason why he allowed him to say what he did. And so let's go on. It says, the Redeemer promised to a penitent people, Isaiah 59, verse 2 to 8. Tell how terrible and grievous our sins are in the Elohim's sight. The first verse contains the wonderful promise, behold, the Yahweh's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, and neither his ear heavy that it cannot hear. If we would repent of our sins and turn unto him with the fasting and prayer, he will have mercy upon us and will hear our prayer. Though our sins are unspeakably great, and Isaiah 59:9-13 are of a good report, some of the people are conscious and repenting from their sin, and Isaiah 59:16-19 is a prophecy too sad to speak of, for it applies unto those upon whom the responsibility rested for the bringing about of a reformation by the presenting of the lessons unto the congregation in their true light, calling every sin by its right name instead of applying it unto other people and times, and thereby diverting the instructions intended for the church, for the admonition in the scriptures were overlooked and unheeded, and what Elohim expected of his people during the first 3 months of 1929 was not accomplished, simply because those in the responsible positions failed to discharge their duty. In Isaiah 59:16, it says, first part, and he saw that there was no man, and wondered that there was no intercessor. Elohim was astonished. Moses and Aaron stood between the dead and the living. Numbers 16:48. Elohim used Elijah on the Mount Carmel. And so that Elijah translates into John the Baptist being the Elijah of his day, preparing the way for the restoration of the kingdom, with Yahshua being announced as the one that's to set up the kingdom of grace to start the New Testament. And then you had antiquity Elijah Malachi 4:5 that has appeared before the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh to do the same type of work to effect the revival and reformation. And so that happens to be now. That's what we're called upon now to do, is to get this revival and reformation ready, because that's the next event in front of us that has to take place. 1 Kings 18. In the crisis here brought to view, Elohim finds no man. Ezekiel 22:30. So he himself interposes. In Isaiah 59:16-18, he says, therefore his arm brought salvation unto him, and his righteousness it sustained him. For he put on righteousness as a breastplate, and an helmet of the salvation upon his head, and he put on the garments of the vengeance for the clothing, and was clad with the zeal as a cloak. According unto their deeds, accordingly, he will repay fury unto his adversaries, recompense unto his enemies. Unto the islands he will repay recompense. Elohim clothes himself with his own attributes and advances to set things right. Actually, this is Yahshua, the Son, that clothes himself with his own attributes and advances to set things right. And he started that in 2002 at the Gilead Center on the Passover. Had there been a man, Elohim would have let the man do the work. But as there was none, he does it himself. So when he came to the threshold of the house of Gilead Center at the Passover 2002, he found no man there qualified to do the work that was required to do at that time, and that was to sanctify the congregation with a higher cleansing and get them ready to get their sins blotted out on the Day of Atonement. Not only that, but you had the Pentecost in between that had to be reckoned with. That's the time when you bring forth the two wave loaves and the 144,000, and the future antitypical Pentecost is to be revealed. For this reveals one of the Elohim's working principles. He will use one man or a nation to help correct or punish another. And when that cannot be done, Elohim steps in. While Elohim will come with a vengeance unto some, he comes with the salvation unto others. Now we'll go back and reread this. Father Yahshua will come with a vengeance unto some. He comes with a salvation unto others. Isaiah 59:20. This is exactly what started at the Gilead Center 2002. He came with a vengeance to the ancient men for the house, because when the judgment started, that's for the living. At Gilead Center, ancient men for the house, Ezekiel 9:6, there's your Ezekiel 9, and in 1 Peter 4:17, the judgment began at the house of Yahweh. Okay. And to others, he brought salvation. He brought to the wave sheaf offering that came out of there. That represents the house of David, and as a matter of fact, antitypical David was there, and that's who he appointed to take the place of antitypical Esau. And so, he brought salvation to those that he called out to head up his new movement and his and the everlasting kingdom of heaven, which is the everlasting kingdom of David, is the same thing. And the Redeemer shall come unto Zion. This is not referring to the second coming of Yahshua in the cloud, for it takes place before the probation closes. He is not coming with a vengeance to the righteous in the world, but coming to the church. And when he comes, he will do the work mentioned in Malachi 3:1-3. Let's go read that. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And this is antitypical Elijah. And the Yahshua, whom ye seek, shall suddenly come to his temple. Well, there he is, right? He suddenly came to his temple at the Passover 2002. Even the messenger of the covenant, whom ye delight in, behold, he shall come, saith Yahshua. And so the messenger of the covenant is antitypical Elijah. And if he's not there doing his work to prepare the way for Yahshua to come, I was sent there before Yahshua came in 2002. I was sent there to do exactly what I did, and that was to bring a message from heaven, which came from Yahshua, from heaven, on July 14, 2002, to the brother W. Johnson, and that was the message to prepare the way for Yahshua. Well, actually, when I told brother Johnson in 2001 that there's going to be a changing guard at the Passover of 2002, that was a message that he should have heeded. And he was very worried and concerned about it, but that was a message sent from heaven to him. And when it was sent, he rejected that message. He said, no, I'm the last prophet, and nobody's going to succeed me. There's nothing possible to show this, so I'm not going to pay no attention to it, and he didn't. And that was a message to prepare before the great and dreadful day of Yahshua came, because that was a great and dreadful day to Gilead sinner, because they were judged and started with the ancient men before the house, and they were judged accordingly, and they came to their end. So that was before the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. So Malachi 3, verse 2, it says, but who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appears? For he is like refiner's fire and like fuller's soap. And he shall sit as a refiner and purify the silver, and shall purify the sons of Levi, and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahweh an offering in righteousness. Then shall the offering of Judah, which is the house of David today here at Liberty Hill, Texas, and Jerusalem be pleasant unto Yahweh, as in the days of old, and as in the former years. And I will come near unto you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, and against the idolaters, and against the false swearers, and against those that oppress the hireling and his wages, the widow, and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith the Yahshua of hosts. For I am the Yahweh, I change not, therefore you sons of Jacob are not consumed. Okay, now let's continue on. Isaiah 59:19. So shall they fear the name of the Yahweh from the west, and his glory from the rising of the sun. Okay. For Yahweh will make this coming as an example to the nation. Let's read that again. So shall they fear the name of the Yahshua, the Son, from the west, and his glory from the rising of the sun. For the Yahshua will make this coming as an example unto the nation, just as he did with the Sodom and Gomorrah. Isaiah 59:19, last part. When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the spirit of the Yahweh shall lift up a standard against them. For the John in Revelation 12:15 refers unto this incident. And the serpent cast out his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. For the woman here mentioned is the Elohim's church, Seventh-day Adventists, which keep the commandments of Elohim and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah. The flood is not the blue Sunday law or any persecution in the past, for the blue law has a different setting and is described in Revelation 13 as a persecuting power to enforce the mark of the beast. Flood is the same as the water, which means people in the church, unconverted, whom Satan is using to cause the church to be carried away in a very quiet manner so that no one would be suspicious of the great deception. That's exactly what took place at Kermit, Texas. That's why it was so subtle. That's why Kermit lasted for 33 years with the 11th hour. That's why it was so long. It was so subtle, so gradual over the years that the people there were just rocked to sleep. Those that stayed with Verla said in the end were rocked to sleep by his form of worship that he had developed and created as a counterfeit worship to the true ordained system of the true worship that he had once explained and restored and printed in a booklet and taught it, and yet over the years had eroded that, and he gradually did a complete turnaround and reverse the whole meaning of the true ordained system of the true worship to fit his way of evolving into the counterfeit. So anyway, he says, in this way he attempts to deceive the very elect, 144,000. This is how Satan used Vertus Johnson to deceive the very elect. If it were possible, being impossible, Yahshua himself interposes and delivers his people. See? It was impossible. So Yahshua, though, had to interpose here at Kermit at the start of the Passover and to deliver his people. If he don't interpose, he said he came and he found no man was qualified or able to do it for him. So Yahshua interposes, and he doesn't even antipathically Elijah is not qualified to deliver Yahshua's people. Number one is because he don't have the blood. Only Yahshua is the only one qualified, no matter who he sins to prepare his way, he still, there's no man qualified. That's the reason why he has to send somebody to prepare the way for the Messiah. And that's antipathy Elijah. Those who sign cry for all the abomination of the church and then makes an example of the others. Okay? So since no man is qualified to deliver the children of Israel, the 144,000, because it takes the one that has the blood, then all they can be is sorrows and cries, and then be sanctified by the blood of Yahshua as he teaches them the true ordained system of the true worship, and they learn to follow it after him, then that's how they become sanctified as well. The leaders have to be sanctified first by the blood. Then they can teach the congregation how to be sanctified by it. Revelation 12:16. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood of which the dragon cast out his mouth. The meaning is that they die, being buried in the earth, as in Numbers 16:32. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertain unto Korah, and all their goods. Thus the spirit of the Yahweh, or the spirit of Yahshua, shall lift up a standard against him. Isaiah 59:19, last part. This will fulfill Matthew 13:29-30. Let both the wheat and the tares grow together until the harvest, for the separation will mark the beginning of the harvest, which is in the loud cry of the 12th hour of the judgment of the living time. And this is added unto the third angel to give power and impetus unto the third angel's message, Revelation 18:1. That's your fifth angel. For the spirit of Elohim is poured upon his people. Those who escape the ruin, and the promise is that it shall never depart from them, Isaiah 59:21. As for me, this is my covenant with them, saith Yahweh. My spirit that is upon thee, and my words which I have put in thy mouth, shall not depart out of thy mouth, nor out of the mouth of thy seed, nor out of the mouth of thy seed's seed, saith Yahweh, from henceforth and forever. Read Isaiah, the Gospel Prophet, Volume 3, page 43-49. As soon as the separation is finished and Satan has lost out with his deceptive scheme, the church finds herself in a great conflict with the enemy, Revelation 12:17. And the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, those who are left, which keep the commandments of the Elohim and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah. The war against woman is the blue law. This is incorrect. This is not so. I'm going to read this again, and I'm going to bring you up to par on this, up to present tense on this. As soon as the separation is finished at Gilead Center in 2002, and Satan has lost out with his deceptive scheme, in other words, he had a deceptive scheme that he would intercept this antipathetic Elijah, David, that is represented by a living person, a true witness, called forth to the latest end, their term of Texas. He couldn't get him. The scheme finds himself in a great conflict with the enemy. Okay, Revelation 12:17. And the dragon was wroth with the woman representing the house of David, the 144,000 that was about to come forth out of Gilead Center of Mount Zion at the 11th hour, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed. So the woman was personified in the 11th hour church at Kermit, Texas for 33 years. The woman was there. But it was in the remnant, there was a remnant that was there. Those that were signing and crying for the abomination that she represented there during that 33 years. It says, he went to make war with a remnant that was the house of David that was lodged there in the house of Esau at Kermit, Texas at Gilead Center. Those who are left, which keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of the Yahshua Messiah. Now, what does it mean, have the testimony? The testimony of Yahshua Messiah is found in Revelation chapter 1. It says, let's read it. It says in verse 4, Revelation 1, John, unto the seven churches which are in Asia, grace be unto you and peace from him which is and which was and which is to come, and from the seven spirits which are before his throne. and from the Yahshua Messiah, who is the faithful witness, and the first begotten of the dead, and the prince of the kings of the earth, unto him that loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood. So he loved the remnant there at Kermit, Texas, 2002. I mean, yeah, he loved his remnant because he had washed them in his own blood. And that's who he comes to deliver. So it says that he makes war with the remnant of her seed, those who are left, which keep the commandments of Yahweh, which is the Ten Commandments, and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah, which is the true witness. Okay. And when it says keep the commandments of Yahweh, all of Yahweh's commandments is found in John 15:10. Yahshua says, if you keep my commandments, which is of the sanctuary, you shall abide in my love, even as I've kept my Father's commandments, the ten, and abide in his love. Okay. So, those Gilead sinner that was keeping all of the commandments of not only the Father, but of the Son, that was sign and crown against those that were not doing them right, then that's the remnant of her seed. The house of David was the remnant of her seed. The war against woman is not the blue law. The war against the woman is what I just described to you. It's trying to get those that were sign and crown against the abomination done in the house of Esau at Gilead Sin in Kermit, Texas, 2002 to 2003. Alright, now we're going to the final triumph of the righteous, Isaiah 60. This chapter begins with the words, Arise, shine, for thy light has come, and the glory of the Yahweh is risen upon thee. This is 2002. It says, Arise and shine, the house of David, it's time for you to rise and shine now. The latter rain, the spirit of the Yahweh, and the glory of his power. Alright. It says, for the chapter tells of the end gathering in the time of the harvest. A great multitude composed of all nations and classes of people, rich and poor alike, from all walks of life, kings and rulers among them, and also the wealth of the Gentiles shall come into the everlasting kingdom of the David, that is set up here with Yahshua sitting upon the throne of the David, which is the everlasting kingdom of heaven as well, Daniel 2:44-45. In the days of these kings, the Yahweh of heaven shall set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed or left to other people, but it shall stand forever. Okay, for the nation and the kingdom that will not serve them, the church shall perish. The multitude gathered here are the ones with the palms in their hands. Revelation 7:9. Isaiah 60:19-20. Tell of the purity of the Elohim's congregation and his care over his people. Let's read that again. That tells of the purity of the Yahshua's temple and his care over his people. Isaiah 60:21 says, thy people also shall be all righteous, for the unclean and the unconverted will not be permitted in the everlasting kingdom of the heaven, set up with the antipathy Elijah, David, and Yahshua, making up of the ensign. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For henceforth there shall not no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and the unclean, Isaiah 51. For the remnant of the Israel shall not do iniquity nor speak lies, neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth, for they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid, Zephaniah 3:13. Verse 22 of Isaiah 60 mentions their success in the winning souls unto the Yahshua. Builders of the old waste places, Isaiah 61. For the first verse and part of the second applying to Yahshua himself at the beginning of his ministry, the spirit of prophecy says it will repeat itself with the people of the Elohim. This would find its fulfillment in the time of the harvest with the 144,000. Those who escaped the ruin of Isaiah 59 and 63, by whose effort the great multitude of Revelation 7:9 is made, Isaiah 61:2, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Yahweh and the day of the vengeance of our Elohim. For the acceptable year cannot be a prophetic time, for it would mean 365 years. It must be a literal year of the 12 months. There is a good reason for the believing that this must be that year in which the lessons came and the truth in them made known. Had this not been the prophetic year, the call would not have come, for the Elohim keeps accurate time. For the Nineveh, Elohim gave 40 days to repent. Now unto his people, he gives 1 year to make good. Otherwise, he would have to spew them out of his mouth. And this applies unto those upon whom the responsibility rests, and unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans, right? And that's who the responsibility rested in 2002, to the angel that is in charge of the seventh candlestick there at Kermit, Texas. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Revelation 3:14-16. Well, this is true. Zechariah 3 says in one day he's going to purify that house. And so you go read it. And that started Passover 2002, and by Passover 2003, he had purified that house in 1 year at Kermit. For the call of this great and solemn work was presented to men of the learning and position. Had these been little in their own eyes and entrusted fully in the Yahshua, he would have honored them with the bearing his standard in the triumph unto the victory. But they separated from the Elohim, yielded unto the influence of the world, and the Yahshua rejected them. Volume 5, page 82. Well, what more can you say? It says, the day of the vengeance in Isaiah 61:2 follows the year. The day may be prophetic, which in that case would mean a literal year, which was in 2002, was that literal year to 2003. This is when this met its fulfillment. Thus, it would mean a year in each case. This year of the vengeance is not the seven last plagues, nor is it the destruction of the wicked at the second coming of Yahshua. It takes place before the close of the probation for the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, at Gilead Center. For in Isaiah 61:4 we read, "And they shall build the old ways, they shall raise up the former desolation, and they shall repair the waste city, the desolation of the many generations." For the meaning of this verse is to restore the truth of the Elohim, which has been trodden down under the foot for the many generations. For the 144,000, the true Israel of the Elohim are the builders. Thus we see that after the day of the vengeance, 2002, that day of the vengeance means a whole year, from 2002 to 2003, Elohim's truth is to be restored, see? Elijah, now the true Elijah, is to restore this truth now and revealed to the people. Therefore, it must be before the close of the probation for the entire world now, for the balance of the chapter confirms the same thought. The day of the vengeance is the same as in Ezekiel 9, Isaiah 63, and Isaiah 61, as previously explained. Isaiah 61:6, meaning the 144,000, says they are priests, as explained on pages 37 and 38. This brings us to the close of our study for this hour. You can contact us at the 11th hour call. We're going to close this service now with a song. "Let the Heavenly Light Shine Through" by Elijah Davis. Well, you would not have known about a wonderful Yah if He hadn't created you. And you would not have known about His vast creation and all that He can do. So draw near unto Yah, remember to pray, let the heavenly light shine through. And Yah in His mercy when He comes again will have a heavenly home for you. Let the heavenly light shine through, let the heavenly light shine through. Yah in His mercy when He comes again will have a heavenly home for you. There would not have been a creation of earth if Yah had never come down. He spoke the word, all creation heard, and the world started spinning around. Then He spoke the word and the light appeared, He divided it from the night. And Yah saw that His work was good, created by His mind. Let the heavenly light shine through, let the heavenly light shine through. And you know in His mercy when you come, that Him will have a heavenly home for you. Well, you climb up on a mountain and you look around, there's a green valley below. There's a moon up above that's shining with love, there's a peaceful river that flows. There's the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and all that heaven can spare. And to think that this is just a glimpse of what's waiting over there. Let the heavenly light shine through, let the heavenly light shine through. And Yahweh in His mercy when He comes again will have a heavenly home for you. And Yahweh in His mercy when He comes again will have a heavenly home for you.